Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will be finding common ground and taking it to the next level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. This show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. It's my hope that you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. This is a no-holds-barred show. My guests will have differing spiritual belief systems, and some will have no spiritual beliefs. You may or you may not agree with things that are said. What I'd ask you to do is keep an open mind. This way, you can see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now today, my special guest is Nadira Muhammad, and Swia has led a life of great challenge, and she has recovered from schizophrenia. She's a very spiritual person. She was born in the projects in St. Petersburg, Florida. Her father left when she was three, so she had to be raised in a single-parent home. She always saw herself as normal. She never received any disciplinary problems in school. She made good grades and received her BA degree in psychology from the University of South Florida. When the doctors diagnosed her most debilitating mental disorder known in mental health, she denied it. She questioned their expertise. She refused to take medication. She was then hospitalized 6 times. Her family took a picture of her at her worst, and that's when she knew she needed help. She has been taking medication now for 7 years without a relapse. During her episode, she experienced what could have been revelations and visions from God. She recalls seeing ghosts and spirits. She studied parapsychology for 10 years on her own to understand the difference between mental illness and spiritual occurrences. She is now a published author and a motivational speaker. Her book entitled Don't Call Me Crazy, I'm Just in Love, and is inspired by her true story. It's now required reading for St. Petersburg College in writing and reading classes and suggested reading in abnormal and general psychology classes. Because of her experience, she has grown closer to God and has learned a lot that she reveals in her speeches. Swia has done extensive research and shares her personal experience and provides the warning signs she exhibited as a child. She provides resources to help the community and teaches them how to live out their dreams regardless of the disability. She was selected as an everyday hero on Bay News 9, seen by 2 million viewers, and recently appeared on her first national TV show, Real Talk with Keisha Gordon, that airs in 10 million households. Please contact Swia for speaking engagements, radio and TV interviews, and or book her at 727-776-0291. Or Swia, that's SWYYAHNM@yahoo.com. And her website is www.don'tcallmecrazy.com. So, with that said, I'd like to introduce her. Swia, how are you today?
I'm doing good. I'm glad to be on the show.
Well, thank you for joining me. It's a pleasure. I don't recall how we became introduced to each other, but I trust it was serendipity and meant to be.
That's right.
So, anyhow, can you tell me a little bit about your family of origin? You were raised by your mother.
Yes, I was raised by my mother. She's Muslim now, and she's been Muslim for quite some time. And my father left when I was about 3. He was also Muslim. And my father, I met him one time when I was an adult, and he's in Miami somewhere. I believe he has a mental illness, but I'm not 100% sure. But when I did meet him, he would start writing letters to me, and it was really way off. Like, for an example, he said that he knows more than God, and he's such a brilliant person. And I felt like if only he used to protect the medicine, because he had his own hair grease line, he had his own fish market, and that all went under. But if only he would just take his medicine, what kind of brilliant person he would be. I always wondered that.
Hmm. Well, now, in your autobiography, you talked about warning signs when you were a child. What kinds of signs do you recognize that you exhibited at the time?
Well, as a child, I had slurred speech. I didn't care to make friends at all. And when I became an adult, 6 months before I had my breakdown, I had major migraine headaches every single day for 6 months. And I started And I would look at the wall, and I would see faces, look at the rug, look at the sheets, and I would see faces. So me studying psychology, I knew something was wrong, but no way possible would I have ever said that I have schizophrenia. No way possible would I ever believe that. And that's one reason why I was hospitalized 6 times, because I could not fathom having a disorder. I just couldn't believe it.
Well, I think that's a very normal thing that oftentimes people with mental illness deny it, don't believe it, and are resistant to treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you saw a picture of yourself, what did you see in the picture that woke you up?
Well, my sister had a brilliant idea to take a picture of me in my madness. So I looked at a picture, and my eyes were bulging out like I was really insane. My hair was messed up because I kept rubbing in my hair. I was crying. And I looked at that picture, I said, oh, my God, I need help.
Mm.
I really need help. And that's one of the advice I give to parents. If you have a child that is refusing to take his medication and he's getting hospitalized over and over again, when he has that relapse, take a picture, videotape him. A lot of times what happens is when we get sick, we don't remember the things that we did. We don't know how we looked. So you cannot tell us we're sick. You have to show us we're sick. And that's why I tell parents all the time, you have to do it. You have to.
Well, I have suffered from mental illness, too. I have a bipolar disorder, and I have a picture of me. My hair is long and unkempt and greasy. I have a long, untrimmed beard, and my eyes have a maniacal look to them. And that convinced me that I had a problem. I had not been diagnosed, though. I went through 15 years of terrible depressions, and I drank like a fish. And what I was doing was medicating the mania. And when I was depressed, I wouldn't drink, and they were quite often suicidal depressions, and I attempted suicide and, thank God, didn't succeed. But it was after having a mania, my partner took me to a psychiatrist who said, oh, my God, you've got a bipolar disorder. And I didn't see that picture until later, but I can relate to what you're saying, because I looked like a madman. Yeah.
That's right.
Can you tell me what your early religious and spiritual life was like?
Sure. When I was young, I remember I was about 16 maybe. I can't remember the age. But I remember I was lying in my bed, and then I woke up and I seen a dark spirit jump from off my bed and run into my mom's room. And that's the first time I ever seen. I wasn't sick or anything at the time. that's the first time I can remember seeing a dark spirit. And throughout my life, my mom was Muslim, and so I would go to the masjid to pray, but I never in my heart felt like I wanted to be a Muslim. So I started reading the Quran. I read the entire Quran. In the beginning of the Quran, it said, God wants everyone to be Muslim. So I thought that was coming from God. But when I read the book a second time, the Quran, I realized it wasn't God saying that. It was the person that interpreted the mm-hmm. Quran. So I was like, the only reason why I became, and I'm bashing Islam. I think it's one of the best religions. But when I first read the Quran, the only reason that I became Muslim at that time when I was about 29 was because of that little verse that was in the Quran, and it wasn't from God, it was from a man. So after that, I was so confused. I was like, well, okay, now what? And I would still go to the masjid, but then I would hear my preacher, what they call them, imam, when they're Muslim. And he would say, oh, if your bad deeds outweigh your good deeds, you're going to hell. And I would have to hear this every Sunday. Yes. Every Friday, I would have to hear this over and over again. There's no such thing as ghosts. I would have to hear this foolishness over and over again. I never believed in hell. I still don't believe in hell. And I just stopped going completely. I wasn't learning anything at all, so I just stopped going there because I'm all about becoming a better person and learning as much as I can to become a better person, to treat people good, to treat myself good, to love God. That is my goal, and I wasn't reaching that goal there. So I left the masjid, and then I don't know if you ever heard of the Nation of Islam, but I started going to the Nation of Islam meeting, and then the preacher was really good. I was like really inspired, you know, to be celibate and do things right, and he was great. And then I took the class, and then I read the sheet that they gave me. And they said, in order to be in to complete this class, you have to say that white people are the scum of the earth. I'm like, whoa, my stepdad is white. Are you serious? So I got up, I left. So there you go. I went from one place to another. So here I am, lost, no religion at all. And then I found Keisha Jordan. She's a wonderful person. She's Christian. And she has a church called City of Refuge. And I went to that church. I love it. Every time I go, I learn something. But I'm not Christian. I'm not Muslim. I'm not Christian. I'm just non-denominational. I believe you can learn something through all religions and mm-hmm. have to take what's good, and leave the rest behind. That's my spiritual journey. That's my spiritual journey. And religion is good, religion is really good. And it teaches you how to be a better person. I'm just not really. I'm more spiritual than I am religious. That's me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not with the if you do this, if you have sex before marriage, you're going to hell. If you eat pork, you're going to hell. If you go to the club and go party, you're going to hell. I mean, I'm not with that. I don't have time for that. I love God, and I know. I have love for people. I have unconditional love for people. So I know if my love is that great, I know that God's love is even greater. That's what I
mean. I can relate to that. I belong to a non-denominational church that's primarily based on the teachings of Jesus, but it accepts that all world religions have truths. I've rejected my early notion of God as a God of judgment, and embrace that he's only love and that he resides within us all and all parts of creation. And I consider myself a spiritual being having a human experience. And I think that religion is only useful when it enhances the soul. And a lot of times it is filled with fear and these commandments that you shouldn't do this or that. Like you said, you shouldn't eat pork if you're Jewish.
Yes.
And I think that's silly and superstitious, so
that's, right.
that's my take on it. So what
that's
was
right.
your early concept of God?
Oh, you didn't read this one. When I was younger, I didn't have 100% belief in God because I couldn't see him. And so I read books, I treated people good, I tried to grow within myself and be a better person. I was trying to find God. And when I had my breakdown from my breakdown, I remember I was in the car. My fiance at the time was driving me to the hospital, and I looked up to the right in the sky, and I saw a face without a body. It was a transparent, void of color, a man's stern face in the sky. So I, and still to this day, I don't know if God, if that was God or an angel or, you know, just mental illness. To this day, I'm not sure, but I know I was looking for God, and it makes a little sense that maybe he would show himself. I don't know, but a lot of people don't believe that you can see God, and, you know, they think that's crazy. So to this day, I don't know for sure what I saw. I don't, but I was looking for God. I didn't, but when I saw, I tell you what convinced me that there was God. When I saw that ghost, before I started reading Sylvia Brown. You're aware of Sylvia Brown?
No, I'm not.
Okay, well, she's she passed away, but she was one of the biggest psychics. You have to start reading her book. But when I read Sylvia Brown, before I started reading Sylvia Brown, I saw a ghost. It was a Caucasian woman. She had a white dress on. At the bottom of her dress, it was burnt. And you'll read about this in my book. After that experience, I was like, okay, was that mental illness or was that a ghost? What was that? So I started reading Sylvia Brown, and she says all ghosts, they will show how they died on their body. And I was like, oh, my God. So I was like, if spirits are real, it has to be a God. So I was a believer from then on out. I was a believer.
I bet.
I was a believer. That's right.
Well, let me ask you, have you ever had a faith crisis?
Well, faith crisis?
Yes, where you didn't believe or where you were struggling to believe.
Yeah, that was,
or where you
that
lost
was,
faith in yourself.
Never lost faith in myself, but through the beginning, before I had that breakdown, I didn't believe in God 100%. It was like 99.9. I'm like, you know, because usually people believe in, and people don't believe in things they can't see. Like a lot of people say, oh, I believe in God. And as soon as something tragic happens, they're like, oh, there's no such thing as God. Wait a minute. So you believe in God for 25 years, and just because you have one bad experience, you're going to just throw it away and say there's no such thing as God. And a lot of people do that, and they do that because they never had 100% belief in God in the first place. Because if they did, they would not be in doubt.
So what would you say to somebody who is struggling to find God?
I would say read as many spiritual books as you can. I read my book. Don't call me crazy. I just love. Try your best to become a better person, because as you grow, you're going to get closer and closer to God as you grow. And have an open mind. Have an open mind. What you believe today, you may not believe tomorrow. And that's why I tell people, you have to have an open mind, because I'm not God. God is perfect. God knows all the answers. I don't know all the answers. Nobody knows. Nobody living knows all the answers. So I can't tell somebody that all my beliefs are 100% correct. I can't do that, because I'm not 100% sure. You know? So what I tell people, keep in mind, you have to.
That is so important. That is right. And people never stop learning if they keep an open mind. If they close their mind, they're going to just grow stagnant. So that is very important. Thank you for making that point. Let's talk about your book. Can you give us an idea of what's in the book and how it can be helpful to other people?
Oh, yes. Throughout the book, I teach how you can overcome your mental illness. I teach how you can live out your dreams. And I've learned when I was doing my business plan with the government to get funding for my business, I learned from Karen McGee that people with disabilities own their own companies more than people without disabilities. And when I learned that, I was like, oh, my goodness. And a lot of people would be shocked to hear that. But it makes sense because people with disabilities, you know, I can just speak for myself. Me, and I have a hard time working for other people. And that's why I own my own corporation now. I have a hard time working for people. You know, people want to micromanage you. They want to tell you when you have to go to the bathroom, when you can't, you know, when you can eat, when you can't. You know, I can't deal with that. It's just, you know, it's like being a slave. It's like being in a box. You know, I have to free myself. I have to start my own business. But throughout the book, I teach you how to live out your dreams. Start whatever you want to do in life. Start doing it for free. And then read every book you can and learn how you can make money doing what you love to do. And I remember one famous author, I can't think of his name, Robert Kiyosaki, I can't think of his name. But he says, I saw a videotape on him talking. He said, if you can't work for free for at least 3 years, I don't want to partner with you. I was like, wow. And it's amazing he said that because it has actually been exactly 3 years since I've been speaking for free. Now I'm a professional speaker, but before that, it's been exactly 3 years. I'm like, well, wow, it's something to that. The number three is very powerful. It's something to that, you know. But yeah, you have to be willing. But if you can work for free and love what you're doing, that can be your God-given talent. And if it is your God-given talent, you're gonna soar over so many people. You're gonna soar. Like for example, Oprah. She is a phenomenal person. She is living out her God-given dream. I would say she's the best interviewer I have ever seen. That's my opinion. But she found her niche. She found her God-given talent. I'm telling you, if you do that, you work for free, you read the books on how you can make money while you're working for free, become an expert, and then you start charging, and you can make a living out of doing what you love to do. And that's another thing I teach in my book. So my book is all about growth. Yes, it is a love story. Yes, it is very dramatic. Yes, it's fiction inspired by a true story. It's a page turner. But my heart is to teach people how to grow, how to reach their dreams, and also my heart is to end the stigma on mental illness. Because, you know, when I was in college and I studied psychology, and I looked at those textbooks, and when I saw the mental ill person, I said, no, that's not me. I don't look like that. And that's what a lot of people do. They have this idea of what mental illness looks like, and they have a false idea, a very false idea. It can happen to anybody. And as a matter of fact, 49% of Americans will experience a mental illness at least once in their life. So, you know, it shouldn't be a stigma. And I'm here to do everything in my power to make sure that we end the stigma on mental illness so more people will get help. This world, I mean, people with mental illness that I have met are brilliant. If they can get together, like I've gotten it together with my medicine and other things I've learned, if they can get it together, they can be brilliant. They can make money, and they can be in charge. I'm telling you. I'm telling you.
Well, what are the things that you've learned that have helped you cope with your mental illness?
Several things that I'll put in Don't Call Me Crazy. I'll give you an example. This is one thing that I've learned. It's very helpful for me, and I'm pretty sure it'd be very helpful for some of your readers. When a person used to make a judgment call about me when I had my experience and mental illness and I was naive and unsure of myself, people make a judgment call all the time. And I would get so angry, so upset. For 3 days, I would be stressed out, making me sicker and sicker, all because they made a judgment call about me. Then I learned when someone makes a judgment call about you and they don't know you, 9 times out of 10, they're talking about themselves or someone very close to them. So what you're supposed to do is keep quiet. Don't say nothing. Let them keep running their mouth, and at the end of their sentence, they'll tell you what you're talking about. I'll give you an example.
I was talking to a preacher, and I said, oh, in the beginning days, you know, people live forever, you know. I didn't mean forever. I just meant, you know, for a long time. And he said, oh, you know what? You need counseling. So I said nothing. I let him keep running his mouth. At the end of the sentence, he said, oh, I'm so stupid. I'm just so stupid. I said, you know what? You need cognitive therapy. That's what you need. Because I've tried counseling, and I didn't need it. I need the medication. But he needed counseling. So it works. And I remember another story I tell you. When I was in the hospital, and I was talking to the social worker, and he did marijuana, right? I didn't know this, but she thought that I did marijuana. So he said, "What did he say? You're sick because you're doing marijuana." And I didn't say nothing. I just looked at him, and he said, "Yeah, I do marijuana myself." And then he stood up. He's like, "What did I just say?" He had no idea how he spoke those words out of his mouth. He had no idea. He walked away with his eyes bulging out, and he walked away. He's like, "Oh my God, I can't believe I said that about myself." I mean, it's powerful. It's power. And my book is very powerful. You'll learn so many things. And another thing, I'll give you another power technique from my book. When you're communicating with someone, especially the loved ones, it's very hard to have a discussion, argument without cutting people off. But you have to learn to allow a person to complete their full sentence. If you don't, you might misinterpret what they're trying to say. So you allow them to say their entire sentence. When they take a break, then you start talking. And that power technique right there, it has helped me avoid so many arguments. Because I used to fuss. And so it helped me so much. And another thing that can help your listeners. If you get stressed easy like I do, get a relaxation massage at least once every 2 weeks or as needed. I'm telling you. Like, I was so stressed one day, I got me a massage. 3 months went by, I had no stress.
Great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, how can you tell the difference between mental illness and visions or revelations from God?
The way you can tell, we get revelations from God in several ways. One is what I experience. It feels like someone's controlling your thought, and you know it's not coming from you. It's a thought pops up in your head. It's not a normal thought. It's a thought that someone put there. You know, a God or a spirit guide, and you know it's not from you. That's one way you can tell. Another thing, if you see something negative, a vision that's negative, demonic, or you know, that's not from God. Anything that's negative is not from God. Some people, they're able to hear their spirit guide. If it's truly a spirit guide, she would tell you things and she would guide you through your life, and you would avoid making mistakes because of her. It never would be something negative. Never. If it's from a spirit guide. And you have to read. You have to read those books. And that'll tell you the difference, you know, and tell you what ghosts look like and tell you what spirits look like so you can know. And God gives revelations through feeling, too. Like when I was walking through the hospital and I was sick, God was telling me a movie is going to be made about your story. And I was like, wait a minute, I don't have a job. I'm a TV producer. I said I don't have my own show yet. I don't have a car. I have nothing. And when I was walking, I was still like a movie. And now four directors so far want to produce a movie about my book. I'm just waiting on the right director. The right director and the right amount of money. Yes. So everything that I said will come to light is starting to come. It took 10 years, but it's starting to come to light. And that's another way you can tell if it really was from God, because if it was from God and he said you're going to be this or that or you're going to do this and you start doing it, that's your confirmation right there. That is your confirmation.
Beautiful. All right. Well, now tell me how mental illness affects somebody.
Oh, man.
Because there's so many different kinds.
Oh, yeah, let me tell you. Man, what people do not realize that have been dealing, your family suffers greater than you. They suffer. My brother committed suicide. I was devastated. Let me tell you, families right now are so frustrated when with a child that's refusing to take medicine. My heart goes out to them. My heart goes out to them because I know how that experience is so awful and traumatic to the family. It's scary to you too, yes, but to the family, oh my God, you have to stop putting your family through this. If you feel like you don't have a mental illness, I understand that. Go and get a second opinion. But if everybody's telling you that you need the medication, please go ahead and take the medicine because it's too much. It's too much. My sister had to bathe me. I didn't want to wash. I didn't want to eat. I didn't want to do my hair. I didn't know who I was. I was gone. I was absolutely gone. And the family seeing that over, they saw this 6 times. Can you imagine? I mean, any other parent would have kicked me out. Okay, you don't want to take a medicine? Bye. But my mom loved me so much that she held my hand each time. If my sister wouldn't have taken that picture of me, I would probably still be getting hospitalized over and over again. It's traumatic. And you get frightened. Like, when I saw that face in the sky, I was frightened. And I was so frightened. And I looked away, and I looked back, and it was gone. It's frightening to have schizophrenia. But if you get medicine and right now I'm symptom-free. I get stressed every now and then. When I feel stressed, I go get a massage. I'm good for 3-4 months. So I am symptom-free, and that is a good feeling. This can happen to anybody. You can be symptom-free. You can start making money. You can live a successful life, but you have to respect the doctors and what they went to school for. These doctors have gone to school for 8 or more years to be able to save your life. You have to give them respect. You have to.
What advice do you have for people to overcome mental illness, and can it really be overcome?
It can. You have to do what I did. You have to read a lot. Read my book, Read Don't Call Me Crazy, Just in Love. Read it. It'll give you a lot of keys to success, a lot of ways you can avoid the mental illness. And another thing I would suggest is learn everything you can about your mental illness. Like, for example, I used to call people a lot, and that's one of the signs of a person with a mental illness, so I stopped doing that. Learn everything you can about the mental illness so you'll know what not to do. That's another key to success I give people. And avoid those arguments. Use those power techniques. Avoid those arguments. That'll keep you from stress. The main thing that stresses people is other people. it's other people.
That's only if you take it on, though.
That's true. That's
nobody
true.
Can make you feel any particular way. You have to own responsibility for your own feelings.
Right.
And so many people
right.
will say, well, you're stressing me out. Well, then just walk away. You know, it's as
yeah.
simple as that. You know.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, let's take a quick break. I'm going to run a brief commercial on my latest book called Shades of Gay. You need to search Amazon.com by using my name, David Clark, because there's more than one book out by that title. So here we go. Well,
prepare to be shocked. Prepare to be moved. Prepare to laugh. Prepare to cry. And prepare to be inspired. Dive into David Clark's latest book, Shades of Gay, and you will find yourself plunged into the trenches of sexual addiction. You will embark upon a kaleidoscopic tour from the abyss to higher ground. In the beginning, it was love at first sight when Daniel and Mark met, but through the years, that same love became tainted. Daniel, an alcoholic and sex addict, has found himself unable to resist the lure of other men. When Mark discovers his infidelity, he leaves Daniel, who begins a dark descent into sexual tryst after tryst. Shades of Gay reveals the myriad desires a lost man can permit his body and soul to revel in, despite the pain they bring. But can such fleeting moments of pleasure bring meaning to life? Will Daniel realize the love he had with Mark is worth more than the sweat spent in other men's beds?
And again, the book is called Shades of Gay. It is available on Amazon.com. And if you want to find out the answer to that question, you'll need to get the book. And we're talking with Swia Mohammed, who is author of a book herself, and that is Don't Call Me Crazy. And I am having a little technical difficulty here, so please bear with me a minute. Okay, here we go. So, at any rate, we've been talking about mental illness. Swia has overcome and is a survivor of schizophrenia, which is the most serious form of mental illness. She has said that 49% of people will experience mental illness in their lifetime. The largest form of mental illness that affects people is depression. When it's debilitating, it can be deadly, as can be any mental illness. I have a bipolar disorder, and many people will commit suicide if they're not treated. So if you or a loved one has any signs of depression, of seeming out of touch with reality, get help. And as Swia suggested, take a picture of them when they are decompensating, meaning getting worse, and show it to them, and maybe that will wake them up as it did Swia. Now, Swia, you take medicine, right?
Yes.
Okay. And how quickly did you respond to the medicine?
Very quick. It was just, I remember I was on, first it was Seroquel and clomipramine. The clomipramine was for the OCD that I have. I have a little bit of OCD. So we the doctor stopped the clomipramine from what my parents said. She stopped giving it to me, and then I had a breakdown, so we realized we needed it. I had to get off the Seroquel because it was making me eat too much, and I was gaining too much weight. And then, so now I'm on perfect medication. It's clomipramine. It's Geodon for the hallucinations. It's Cogentin. So I'm on these medicines that is really working well in my body. I don't have any side effects except for dry mouth sometimes. I drink water throughout the day so it doesn't bother me. So I'm not having any side effects from the medicine. When I get older, I may have to change the medicine because of the side effects. But right now, it's okay. Okay for me.
That's great. That's great. I've had to change medicine. I was on lithium for a number of years, and that totally stabilized me. But it started to affect my thyroid gland. I went hypothyroid, and then it started to affect my kidneys. So I had to switch over, and in the process of switching over, I had another mania. So it's very important to work closely with your doctor and pick a doctor that you feel confident in, get referrals from other people, because there are a lot of psychiatrists out there that need a psychiatrist themselves. I've had a couple of those myself. One that had bulging eyes. Yeah.
Wow.
So I don't know what that was about. Okay, so is getting past prejudice and stigma towards the mentally ill often more difficult than the symptoms themselves?
It can be. It can be because I remember when I won an award, it's called Black Girls Rock. It's inspired by the National BET show, and I remember getting my award and then sitting down, and then them the show airing a segment about an interview about me, and I saw a few people giggle because they just learned I had mental illness. So it can be tough sometimes, but with me, if I don't tell someone I have a mental illness, they don't know. I've never had someone knew I had a mental illness, because I'm just a normal person like everybody. I'm just, throughout my relationship, my boyfriend might say, oh, he's so crazy, but he had no idea I had a mental illness. You know, so if I don't tell people I have a mental illness, they won't know it, you know. But when you do start telling people, you know, they go into giggling and stuff, you know, but that's ignorant, because I'm trying to empower everybody. I want everybody to make money. I want everybody to be rich and wealthy. I want everybody to be successful. You know, I love everybody unconditionally, and for people to giggle because I tell them I have a mental illness. That's just ridiculous, and shame on them. You know, God's looking at everything you do, so shame on them. So it can be tough sometimes, but you have to be brave. I want more people out there to tell their stories. I want more celebrities. We look up to the celebrities. I want more celebrities to tell their stories, because that's what's going to end the stigma. More people coming out and tell it. And because, and what I found, like what you just said about professionals having mental illness, you know, therapists have the highest suicide rate, along with policemen and other people. You know, I mean, a lot of people that's in the field of psychology need medication. They don't realize it, a lot of people. And I got my BA degree in psychology. And a lot of people are spreading the stigma that's in the field of psychology, which is ridiculous. I remember I worked at this one place, and the therapist was like, oh, you know, his style is so thick, this child can't get help. And, you know, it's just ridiculous, you know. And you know, and then they would sit in the break room, and they would talk about the clients, naming their names, telling each other what the client did. You know, it's ugly. It's not right. But you'll find that a lot of people that are in the mental health field have a mental illness themselves, and they're denying it, and it causes the stigma to spread, and it needs to stop. And I'm one of the people, I'm one of the activists that's going to stop it.
Well, you know? That's well said, and I think it's a very important point, and that's why I said it's so important to get referrals and to make sure that you feel comfortable with your doctor. And if you start with somebody and you don't feel comfortable, fire them. Get a new doctor. I had to do that myself two times. And, you know, I'm very grateful I did that, because doctors can truly save your life if you're willing to trust them and take the medicine. Yeah.
That's
so,
right.
Now, can people still live out their dreams despite having a mental illness?
Yes, definitely, definitely. And I'm just going to be a prime example for everybody. I was molested by my brother when I was 5 years old, and he committed suicide. I was bullied in school. The girl wanted to fight me, so I was 8 years old, and I attempted suicide, and on and on and on. I just had a very traumatic life and a very traumatic mental illness. But look at all that's happening for me. You know, I'm getting on TV. I'm touching millions of lives. Now I'm a professional speaker, and it can happen, you know. And like I said earlier, people with disabilities, they own their own companies more than people without disabilities, you know. So we're aware of that, you know. I mean, if people would get their life together and just take the dog on medicine, and then, you know, they can live out their dreams, you know. Some people say, oh, you know, I don't need to take medicine. God's going to heal me. The thing is, a lot of people don't realize is that God sends people to you that can help you. That's what He does,
right. You
know. And he put ideas into the doctor's mind that created the medicine to help you. You know, this is God. And when people don't understand the role of God, they get really confused. They have bad lives. They have traumatic lives. And, you know, I'm drama free for 15 years. You know, but when people have the wrong relationship and wrong idea of God, their life is just turmoil. It's just, you know, but He sends people to us to help us. And I know people, I've been there. I know the last thing a patient wants to hear is that they need medication, you know, because everybody's going to be telling them that, and it's going to drive them crazy, you know. That's why I say just go ahead and take a picture, because I mean, it's going to be so hard convincing. How can you convince someone they need medicine when they're sick? You know, I mean, it's going to be tough.
Right.
No.
Right.
Yeah.
You raised a question, and it's eluding me right now, so I'll ask another one and come back to it if I think of it. What does your book cover regarding mental illness? You've already talked a little bit about that, but reviewing is always good because people don't always hear the message the first time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't call me crazy. It's inspired by my true story. Anika is a normal person. She experiences drama from her friends. Her friends don't like her lover. She experienced drama from Mosey as a boyfriend, and drama from her future mother-in-law, and then she just loses her job and starts showing signs of mental illness. And then she starts seeing ghosts and spirits, and she gets baked right then, and then she has a relapse. I mean, this is a patron. People have told me it's the best book they've ever read. That's what people have told me. I mean, it's a nonstop page turner. I now have a literary agent now. It took me some years, but I finally have a literary agent. I have another book coming out, Don't Call Me Crazy, the sequel, and oh boy, this is going to be good.
good for you.
Those that read the first book, one of the people, I can't say which character, but one of the characters will come out and tell everybody that they are homosexual. And so I touch on that topic a lot in my book. Because I want people to love on everybody. You know, I don't care what your sexual preference is, what your race is. You know, God loves you regardless. God loves you. And that's why I want people to learn in my second book, in the sequel, which, you know, we're working on right now to get it edited, get it presented. And it's going to be so controversial. Some preachers might get upset. You know, but it's going to be good. It's really going to be good.
That's great. I remembered the question I was going to ask you. You've talked about being symptom-free for 15 years. How old were you when you were diagnosed and you went through 6 years of hell?
Well, I've been drama-free for 15 years, but I actually had... I had my first breakdown when I was 28 years old, and now I'm 37.
That's
pretty young.
Yes. Well, doesn't schizophrenia usually affect young people?
Yeah, around that age. It usually happens when people start experiencing a major mental illness. It's usually during their career phase, when they first start their career, and their career is very stressful, or either when they're in college, And the classes are very stressful. That's when people usually start experiencing that. And that's one reason why I feel like it's important that we start getting mental exams, too, just like we get physical exams. It shouldn't be anything wrong with getting a mental exam, you know, because of the school shootings. Look who's doing it. It's people that have a mental illness. One kid was in college. He was very smart. I think he was going for his doctorate. It's happening with some of the soldiers that are doing shooting sprees, and if they had just had a mental exam and found out they were slipping, they were going down the wrong path, all that could have been prevented. And I also feel with the hospitals, we have to find out. I'm working with NAMI now, but we have to find out, is there any way we can make it legal to show the videos of when a person gets sick and is out of control. After we medicate them, can we show them the video? I mean, because I think that would improve so many people. Because, like I said, when you're going through it, you can't remember everything you did, so you don't think anything's wrong with you. But we can show them, here, this is what you did. But I don't know the laws against that, you know, and it's over my head. I'm just putting it out there into the world so somebody can pick up on it and maybe do something about it.
Good advice. Let's see here. Can you tell me what your book covers regarding parapsychology? And first of all, can you tell me what parapsychology is?
Yes, parapsychology is the study of extrasensory perception. There's a kid in my book that has telekinesis. He can move things with his mind. and a teacher's thinking he's throwing pencils at people on purpose. And in the book, I make it exciting, where Anika sees ghosts. And one of my favorite parts of my book is when the nurse, psychiatrist, and counselor gets together and they're talking about parapsychology. Anika tells them that in 1941 there was a fire and a woman died and her husband died. And they're like, how did you know there was a fire in 1941? So it's parapsychology way all throughout the book. It's fun. Even though she's mentally ill, the psychiatrist is saying, wait a minute, there's something special about this girl. I don't think we should judge her just yet. It's something about her. And then so when Anika's hospitalized, her hair is done beautifully. It's weaved, and her skin is soft and clear, and she looks healthy. She looks like she's in high spirits. So they're saying, what happened to this girl? What happened? So the psychiatrist is saying, wait a minute, guys, I don't think you should laugh just yet. It's something special about this girl. You know, so it's fun. It's parapsychology throughout, and you're going to learn a lot. You're going to learn a lot about parapsychology in the book also.
Cool. What inspired you to write the book?
What inspired me? When I first had my breakdown, I felt like I needed, as a professional, to take the medication at least 3 months so the chemicals in my brain will become balanced again. But in the same note, I felt like once I started taking this medicine, my creativity would die out. So I started writing the book. I said, I have to share this. I have to share this story with somebody. So I started writing the book because I was inspired by the hospitalization. I was like, I gotta get this story out. And I gotta get the story out before this medicine affects me. So, but the medicine never killed my creativity. I still got creative. I'm just not as hyped as I was. I used to be very hyped, but I'm not as hyped as I was, you know. And then so the schizophrenia and the medicine hasn't affected my creativity.
Good.
And I also wanted to end stigma. I was so angry with these counselors talking bad about the clients, and you know, and like throughout the book, you know, it's a part in there, you know, where Nico voices that concerns about how they treat them. Like I remember when I was hospitalized, they had like bars up, like we was in a prison or something. I'm like, wait a minute, what's this? And then I remember the beds like it was like coffins with a mat thrown on them. I mean, it was ridiculous. You know, and in the book I say, you cannot punish us for being sick. You cannot punish us for being sick. Why is there bars up? And I had went to Wimmore, and that's the best hospital I've ever been through. They didn't have any bars up, or, you know, they had group therapy, and they had nice fluffy beds and everything we needed. So I experienced the best, and I also experienced the worst. And that was probably quite an experience.
Mm.
You know, people walking around, the counselors walking around, said, "Coo coo coo coo, you're crazy." I mean, the mental health techs, you know, laughing at people and talking about my brother that committed suicide. The one tech was talking about him in front of everybody, in front of all the clients. I mean, and breaking confidentiality. It's horrible. It is so horrible.
How much of your book is based on your own life?
I would say, when people read it, they think everything is about me, and they will argue with me and tell me everything is about me. But I would say a little bit of the hospitalization is about me, but the... just a little bit, like maybe 10% is about me, and the rest is made up. And in the first book, my boyfriend Mosley, that's made up. Everything that he does and goes through, that's made up. And that's, I question myself, how was I able to write this book and not include anything that my ex boyfriend did? You know, I wonder why I didn't include him in the book. You know, because my second book, I do include some of the things that he did. So I always wonder why did I do that. But yeah, but I would say about 10% is about me, and then the other part is fictional. Yeah.
What are your goals for the book?
I this book, Don't Call Me Crazy, it's required reading in several colleges. We're trying to get it required reading in every college we can get it in. But I think that me being a bestseller, I think it's going to come with a second book. I really do. I just feel that way. Something tell me that is. I'm going to have a literary agent for the second book. It's controversial. I really believe that second book is going to help the first book get out there more.
Mm-hmm.
I have people that's begging me to letting them read some of it. I have people, like, if you go to don'tcallmecrazy.com, you'll be able to read it, sign up to read a sample of my book. You know, I have people, when is it going to be ready? When is it? One guy, he bought five books, my first book, he bought five books, and then he turned around and he say, what do you need to get the second book out? And I said, I need a copyright, I need this. So he bought five more books.
Oh, nice.
It's like, I'm telling you, it's the Don't Call Me Crazy the sequel. It is going to be phenomenal and controversial. I mean, we're going to touch on some touchy subjects. I mean, it's going to be amazing. It's going to hit the world by storm. And it's going to have truth, God's truth, you know, not the judgmental God that, you know, so many people know, but the loving God that people need to know. That's what they're going to, people are going to find out when they read Don't Call Me Crazy, the sequel. They're going to experience the loving God, the true God, not this judgmental person, judgmental God. You know, not hell, you know, we're going to burn in hell because we decide to, you know, be homosexual. We're going to burn in hell. That's ridiculous. Come on. So you're going to get the loving side of God. It's going to be phenomenal. And it's amazing. Every time I read my book over and over, my first book, and it's just so good. I mean, I'm not trying to brag anything, but I really enjoy reading my own book.
Good.
Yeah, it's a patient.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know, getting back to God, you made a statement somewhat earlier in the show. You were talking about how God doesn't judge people. And I just like to put it out there that God makes no mistakes. He makes no junk. Everybody is made exactly as they're meant to be. And diversity is the spice of life. So matter what color you are, no matter what your sexual orientation is, gender, national origin, you name it, that is the way God made you, and you should celebrate your uniqueness and seek to, and this is a suggestion, I'm not telling you that you need to do this, but try it out, you know, celebrate yourself and celebrate diversity, celebrate everybody's unique differences and try to find that common ground that I speak of in my show, where you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Because when you compare yourself to others, you're judging. And it's really important when it comes down to something like mental illness not to judge somebody, because as Swia herself said, the judgment comes back on you. God sees all. And that's not to say that bad things are going to happen to you, but they may not be particularly pleasant. Because whatever challenges come along that we don't meet, and one of them is taking a good hard look at ourselves, then they're going to present themselves again in other forms that can be even more unpleasant. So wake up and smell the coffee, folks. Okay, one final question. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Nothing. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, we're just about at the end here, so I would like to ask you, what are the overt signs of mental illness that family members can look for?
Okay, for depression, it's normal to get depressed, but if you're depressed for longer than 2 weeks, that's a sign that you may need some help, you may need counseling, or you may need some medication. And pay attention to your children. They don't care to make friends. They have slurred speech. They might need help. They might be schizophrenic and not even know it. If you all of a sudden stop doing what you love to do and get depressed, that's a sign of major depression. And you love to do something, and all of a sudden you don't want to do nothing, and you stop calling people, you isolate yourself. Those are all signs. If you hallucinate and they're not positive, they're negative, and you have a break from reality, and hallucinations and visions and all, then they're negative, that's a sign. Because I do believe that some people are very spiritual and they can see ghosts and spirits without being mentally ill. I do believe that with all my heart.
Right,
and,
absolutely.
So if you have ever hear anything negative, and you know, the voice is telling you to do something bad, or that's not from God, that is complete mental illness, and you need to have someone talk to you.
Thank you.
And if someone's out there and they need help, they can always dial 211 from their phone and it's 2-on-1 is available in most states. You can find a doctor that'll help you if you ever need help.
Great. Well, thank you for joining me today. Unfortunately, we've come to an end.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you.
I wish you the best of luck with your book. Hope it's made into a movie, and good luck with the sequel.
Thank you. Everybody go to don'tcallmecrazy.com.
Okay, once again, we come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who are having a spiritual experience. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.